You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Big weekend for Razorback sports. You got Arkansas, Florida on Saturday night in Gainesville. College Game Day is going to be there tomorrow. Before that game, of course, it's the Boogie Flan versus Darius Acuff showdown. I don't know that they want it to be, you know, like labeled as this one-on-one matchup, but like that's what it is to everybody, I feel like, going into that one. You got baseball here in Fayetteville this weekend. Softball's in Fayetteville, too. SEC Indoor Track and Field Championships are in College Station. The men and the women, a chance to win SEC titles this weekend. We'll try to get you up to date on everything here during the show, but especially basketball, because this is a big game between the Razorbacks and the Gators tomorrow night. It's going to be a 7:30 Central tip-off in Gainesville. It's going to be on ESPN. Mentioned a second ago, College Game Day will be there tomorrow morning. So this game is getting the full ESPN treatment. I mean, it's a ranked Florida team, a ranked Arkansas team. Florida, a couple of games ahead of Arkansas and Alabama in the SEC standings. And if they win tomorrow, Ethan, I mean, they don't win the SEC necessarily. They may, you know, depending on what happens with Alabama. But, boy, they sure put themselves in a good spot. If you're Arkansas, you try to win it, get within a game, and put a little bit more pressure on Florida that last week.
Yeah, if my calculation's right, I think that they might would win it outright with the win over Arkansas, because they'd have the two-game cushion with two games left. They've beaten both Arkansas and Alabama. So
they would have the number one seed in the tournament locked up at that point. But, like, Bama could still share the title. I guess maybe the right way to say that is that they don't necessarily win the outright title with the win over Arkansas if Alabama wins tomorrow.
Yeah, they'd have the tiebreaker for the one seed in the tournament with the head-to-head. But it's a big game for both teams, not only because of the SEC championship aspirations, but also this is a big-time seed, NCAA tournament seeding game for Arkansas. I mean, this is one that if you win that, right now all the metrics kind of align to where it's like they're kind of slotted as probably a five seed, maybe like the last four, maybe. But you win this, and I think it can really vault you into safe kind of feeling four-seed territory, and maybe your head gets a little big with a three. And then with Florida, they're looking right now like, you know, if you put aside the start to the season that they had, they might be the team outside of the top three that's pretty clear of Duke, Michigan, and Arizona that you're feeling the best about, like a deep Final Four type run. I mean, this is a big game for them to try, and, you know, I think they're slotted as a two right now, but maybe they could work their way to a one. Maybe.
I wouldn't put anything past Arkansas with the way it can score. Now, defense is, it leaves a lot to be desired in a lot of games. If Arkansas were to win out, say, like, win six in a row, I guess it would really be eight in a row if you count back to the two that they've won going into Florida. If they were to win out in the regular season and go over to the SEC tournament and win that, then they're for sure in that top three seed conversation. Top four seeds, though, and it doesn't always work out like this, but the NCAA tries to protect the top four seeds as best they can and keep them close to home. And here's why that matters for Arkansas. There's two regional sites fairly nearby. There's Oklahoma City, and there is St. Louis. And you can guarantee that if Arkansas were to get sent to either of those spots the first week of the NCAA tournament, that'd be a big, big Razorback contingent there. Now, it kind of depends on, like, who you're sent there with, and especially, like, that second game, if you can make it to the second game. You know, like who else is in your your quadrant, so to speak. Like, I remember when Arkansas got sent to Kansas City for the Sweet 16 in 1995, it was, let's see here, Arkansas, it was Virginia, Memphis, and Kansas in Kansas City. I think Kansas was the one, Arkansas was the two seed. Well, there were a lot of Razorback fans at the Arkansas-Memphis game in the Sweet 16. Let me tell you, there were a lot more Razorback fans there after KU got knocked out in the Sweet 16, because now all those KU fans are trying to offload their tickets. And so it would depend on who you get sent there. I don't know what the other teams that might, you know, fit into St. Louis. I guess Illinois could maybe be in that. They probably would be in that field. Probably not in the same side of the bracket. Oklahoma City is a little bit different because neither OU or Oklahoma State are real good this year. But if the point being, if you can pull a big road win at Florida, it really helps you stay home and potentially have some semblance of home court advantage close to home and have some semblance of home court advantage when you get to the first weekend of the NCAAs.
Yeah, and it's really tricky this year, too, because you're like, on one hand, like, that would be great. You know, that you can't put a price tag on having a lot of fans in the arena. We know Arkansas fans travel. Like, last year in Providence, there were a lot of Razorback fans there. There were a lot more St. John's fans. But I do think that you're in a weird spot this year, especially with, you know, it's very top, like, the top one seeds are really good. And then it kind of feels to me, at least, like after that drop off of like I said, Florida might be rounding out, starting to maybe round out the group. It's a lot of minutia, like from maybe 5 through 20 or so, to where it's honestly, I sit here and I'm like, if you're Arkansas, you know, more likely than not right now, you're going to be a 4 or 5 seed. And that puts you, if you were to take care of business in your first two games, playing one of those one seeds. That's just how the bracket works. If you can work your way up to a 3 seed, that's whenever you kind of get the longest runway to have to avoid maybe one of those really top-end teams this year. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could be slotted as a 2 seed.
There's some good 2 seeds.
Like, I mean, Purdue, Iowa State. But I think right now you have a pretty clear, those are the top 3 teams between Duke, Arizona, and Michigan that have established themselves. There's a line there. But I do think that, you know, Arkansas can hang with any of these 1 or 2 seeds because of the way they can score the ball. It's just, you know, it's always what we talk about with the brackets is like you start to like look at where things could be headed and you wonder when that collision course could happen. I think if you're Arkansas right now, you're more just focused on playing your own best basketball, but it is something to take into account, like who could you maybe be you know, on a path to meet in the Sweet 16.
Lenardi's 2 seeds right now are Illinois, Florida, Purdue, and Iowa State. So we mentioned a lot of those. The 1 seeds as of right now, these are pretty easy. You got Duke, he said would be in the East Regional, Michigan in the Midwest Regional, UConn in the South Regional, which is kind of interesting, and Arizona in the West Regional. Now, that's enough NCAA tournament talk. We can get into more in the weeds of that later on. This game against Florida. Florida's playing really good. In fact, you know, you mentioned some of those teams like Duke and Arizona and, you know, some of the others, Michigan. Like, Florida may be playing as well as anybody in the country, as well as any of those teams on the one line. You know, they started, what were they? Were they 0-2 or were they 1-2 in SEC play? They didn't start great.
I think they were just 0-1. They just lost to Mizzou at the start, and then they went on a run.
But then they lost pretty quick to somebody else early in the SEC season, I think.
No, they haven't. They only lost to Auburn. They've only had 2 conference losses right now. So
maybe getting one of their non-conference losses conflated in there, because they lost a bunch right there in December.
They had a 1-3 stretch where they lost to TCU, Duke, and UConn, all, you know, good teams, you know. That's the funny thing about them too, that their losses to Duke, UConn, Arizona, who we just mentioned in that one seed line, none of them were, they were all close. Like that lets you know, even whenever they were losing, like they have the horses to run with these top teams. But yeah, they hit their stride in SEC play, and I think that they just had to figure out some things, I think, especially in the backcourt. But dangerous team.
Boogie Flan. There was a lot of criticism of him early this year at Florida, because they had some games that came down to the wire where he didn't make a good play. You think about the turnover against Duke. I think he had a 5-second call against UConn when they had a chance to inbound it and maybe tie the game. Might have been another game. I think maybe Missouri. Didn't he miss a late shot against Missouri? I think he might have that hurt him in that game. But he's playing better now. And he's not playing at Darius Acuff's level. Like, let's not confuse the two of them. And they're different guards. I mean, Acuff has really come in and embraced that distributor role that Calipari wants for him. It may not be – he had a pretty good assist game the other night when they beat A&M here in Fayetteville. He's scoring more, and so because he's scoring more, he's not always distributing more. Although, again, he had the good game Wednesday. Flan, I mean, he's only averaging like 2 assists per game. These are different players, but because they're probably going to be matched up against each other, and then obviously because Boogie left Arkansas – there's that natural tendency to make it about these two going into the game. I think Arkansas's got the better player, but you know, Boogie's done well for himself here over the last several weeks, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Arkansas fans, they know what Boogie Flan is. I mean, he's, before he went down with the injury last year and that kind of changed things, he kind of hangs his hat on. He's a good defender. I mean, his steal numbers are up. He had a game against Alabama earlier this year. I guess these point guards just all feast against Alabama in that style. But it was like a 15.8 steal, 8 assists game. Like, he's that type of point guard, I feel like, where it's just kind of doing all the defensive stuff and still, you know, commanding the floor, setting the tempo, all this stuff. But he's not like the elite scorer, elite passer that Darius Acuff is. But he is a, I mean, he's improved throughout the season. You think about their last game they just had. They were in a real war at Texas there for a little bit. I think it either got tied or was within two pretty late. They ended up winning by like 13. But he hits a big three in that game. It was really kind of the dagger. He scored 22 points in that one. I think Boogie Fland is kind of hitting his stride to where he's a lot more confident, maybe offensively, creating his own shot, taking shots right now. And I mean, Arkansas fans, like, you know, you kind of got probably the better end of, you know, Darius Acuff is in the running, might be the favorite for SEC Player of the Year. But it's not to take away that Boogie Fland's still a really good player.
You think Boogie left Arkansas because he knew Acuff was coming in? There are people who think that might have been the case.
I mean, I think for sure that had to do something with it. I mean, look at DJ Wagner right now. Like, he's not getting the minutes that he had last year. And you just add, if you add Boogie Fland to the mix with that group, like, what even happens? One of them isn't playing like at all. But I think that, yeah, there was just better opportunity for him at a program that just won a national championship. And he's walked right into like a starting role there. So I think that, I mean, and we'll get maybe into the weeds with this more with this matchup, but that's what it is. Arkansas has the better backcourt than Florida. Florida has the better front court, so something will have to give.
They may have the best front court in America.
They do, yeah. I think that's not even really that controversial to say between Condon and Chinyelu. I mean, those three are incredible. That's what this game is going to come down to, is can Arkansas's bigs do enough to allow the backcourt to take over this game? Like, because I think that this is a fascinating matchup, that you have the team in Arkansas that shoots the best field goal percentage in the SEC, and then you have Florida who has the best field goal percentage defense, and it's because they have that interior height that can affect shots. I don't think Arkansas is going to get as much easy looks in the paint. They're going to have to get in transition if they want a chance to win this, I think, because they're going to have to get easy, like, they're going to have to get easy looks, because it's going to be hard to, you know, get in the half court against Florida and really manufacture the type of offense that we're used to seeing Arkansas, you know, putting up.
How do you slow down Florida inside? Because it's not been every time Arkansas's faced a team with a good big man, but there have been multiple times this year. Boozer is the classic case of it, but there have been others where they just really had trouble slowing down that big, bruising, you know, power forward, center, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, number one, I think the biggest stat you're going to have to look at the end of this game is how many offensive rebounds Florida gets, because I think they're averaging like 16 a game. And you have to, if they miss a shot, you can't be giving them extra opportunities, or else they're just going to continue punishing you. I think Arkansas has to do what it did against Tennessee, to be honest. You could tell that it was the most important thing going into that game for them, that we are going to be physical on the glass, not going to give them extra opportunities. And I think Arkansas won the rebound battle in that game, which is crazy. They're going to have to go into this Florida game knowing that, hey, a shot goes up, you better get a body on these guys, or else it's just going to be, you know, offensive rebound put back time. And I think that Arkansas is going to have to anticipate a little bit on the passes to be already in good help side. And I mean, they're going to need Florida to miss some shots too, I think. Like, you're going to have to kind of pick and choose, I think, with what you're giving up in this game. But sure, the biggest thing is once a shot does go up, you better put a body on somebody.
Now, on the other end, if you're going to the rim, you got to go up hard, because this Florida team, they can really block shots. They had 11 the other night against Texas. They had four different players who had multiple block shots. Condon led them with four.
Yeah, Chinyelu is one of the best. He's on the watch list, I think, for Defensive Player of the Year that just got narrowed down. He's averaging 11 boards and a block, and he's hard to go up against. I think Arkansas is going to have to be, if I'm picking like the biggest keys in this game, I already mentioned defensive glass, rebounding, and then second, I think your shot selection is going to have to be huge in this one. You cannot just go up against the trees softly and expect that it's going to go your way. I watched Texas A&M versus Florida a few weeks ago, and that's what Texas A&M did the whole first. I think they went scoreless for like almost 10 minutes. It was hard offense to watch. It was because they just kept on taking it up against the trees and expecting a different result, and they just were getting it swatted out of there. I mean, this is going to be a game that if you don't go to the rim, I think, with intent to score, it's going to be return to sender. They're going to block some shots. I think that Arkansas is going to have to pick and choose, you know, when it gets in the half court, you know, when to attack those one-on-ones and when to maybe be more strategic with passing the ball, spreading it around, and trying to get an open look from the perimeter. But I think that Arkansas is going to have to get a lot of its offense in the transition. and they're going to have to. And a lot of that for them comes with defensive rebounding and kicking it out.
Boogie, by the way, had 22 in that Texas game. It was one off a season high for him. He had 23 against Tennessee back in January. We'll tell you about Bentonville Glass. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, versatile. They've got they're your quality leader in Northwest Arkansas. They've got skilled craftsmanship. All your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can learn more at BentonvilleGlass.com. How about Darius Acuff as National Player of the Year? That's one of the that's going to come up tomorrow. I'm sure it's going to in this College Game Day. About who gets the award this year? Calipari's been kind of openly campaigning for him. I think Bubba and I talked about this on the baseball podcast yesterday. It was kind of interesting to hear Matt Hobbs have like this like 3-minute kind of dialogue on the radio yesterday, kind of about all the things he likes about Darius Acuff. And so, you know, this is a coach of a different sport at Arkansas, really, you know, talking about the things that he likes and he watches. This reminds me of when McFadden was up for the Heisman, you know, or even maybe more recently in different sports, say like, when Vahiva Aloy or Hagan Smith or Kevin Copps were up for National Baseball Player of the Year. You're influenced because you watch them all the time. Like there's no doubt about that. I think Acuff is the most important player to his team in the country. Now, I say that as someone who has watched every Razorback game this year, just about every one of them, and I haven't watched every Duke game. I haven't watched every BYU game. I haven't watched every KU game, although I've watched a lot of the KU games with Darren Peterson or Patterson. But I think Acuff is he's as important. You're going to have a hard time convincing me that there is a better, more important player to his team than Acuff is to Arkansas. Now, is that what constitutes winning a National Player of the Year award? I don't know. I think that whenever I vote for the Heisman Trophy, I think that that really plays a factor into it. You know, I mean, it's, yeah, you know, I do hate that a lot of times it goes to the teams that are playing for a national championship, but a lot of times the teams are playing for a national championship because they have a great player. I mean, Indiana, great as that team was on the offensive line and the defensive line and different places, and their receivers were really good this year. Like, their receivers were made a lot better because they had this great quarterback in Fernando Mendoza who was playing better probably than anybody else in the country. So it really comes down to what do the voters, what do they think? How do they, what are the qualities and the attributes that are important to them when they vote for this thing? I think Acuff has a legit conversation to be had about National Player of the Year, but I also, you know, will say I don't know enough about some of the others who are in that conversation to really be able to say yes, he does or no, he doesn't. I also understand why John Calipari is going to bat for his player because, you know, you want that trophy on your trophy case, and then it helps you recruit in the next great point guard that's coming out of high school.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that that's what it all comes down to, that it's like, it's why it's so hard, you know, whenever you get to these overall, like, Player of the Year awards in a sport like, even baseball, you run into this between position players and pitchers, where it's like, you know, we're comparing Cam Boozer, who's a rebounding machine and scoring machine, to Darius Acuff, who's a scoring and assist. Like, it's like they just do different things, and mm-hmm. you take any of those off of their team, they're totally different. I mean, look at Texas Tech right now. After JT Toppin goes down, that changes them completely. There's a lot of players who add so much value to their team, and they're not the same without him. And I think that that's where it's tough because, you know, you have Acuff, who's that for Arkansas. You have Boozer, who's that for Duke. You have DeBansa, I think I said his name right, for BYU. So.
By the way, I said Peterson's name wrong. It's Darren Peterson at KU. Gotcha. I watched enough of their games that I can't get his name right.
Yeah. Well, that he certainly could afford to, I think, study some Darius Acuff playing through stuff. But I think that this – you just have a group of really good players this year who they all provide a lot to their team. Darius Acuff's definitely, I think, in the top 10 conversation. And that's what's crazy about it this year is you can make debates for, like, a lot of guys in that top 10 this year for being maybe Player of the Year. I do think that – it was really big for him, even in the loss, to have that game against Alabama, because I think that, you know, he'd been talked about this year Darius Acuff had, but I think that that game against Alabama really got his name out there more. Mm-hmm. It woke people up a little bit. I think that if he has a huge game against Florida, that would only that would really strengthen his case.
Because there's going to be a lot of eyeballs.
There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on the game, and that's what you have to do in these award type of things. You have to perform well in the games that mm-hmm. people are watching. And I think that that's where Boozer has the leg up on everybody right now. I mean, their biggest games, I feel like Boozer's always providing, coming through, producing for them.
Well, the most watched game this year in college basketball. Now, the numbers are skewed a little bit because of the NFL lead-in, but it was Arkansas-Duke.
Yeah.
And think about what Boozer did that night. Now, I know that was a long time ago, but I tell you, when I think about him, that's the game I think about. And I've seen him play other games this year. That's still the game that's front of mind for me.
Yeah, and that's how a lot of these work. I mean, and he's also on a team right now that is a one seed, and they are not the same without him. And that's where it gets difficult whenever you have a team. Like, you're comparing Darius Acuff on this Arkansas team that's probably a 4 or 5 seed. Without him, who knows what seed they are. Then there's Boozer, who, if he's not on that Duke team,
they're a 2.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I think they might drop a little bit further even. I don't know. He's that important to them. But who knows? It's hard to compare. That's the mantra I'm getting at, is that these national player of the year, there's just players who do different things, and it's hard to compare their value. Sometimes you have a clear winner, and those are great. But it's also fun to have these years where you can debate it.
Did you see this video? It's going to – I forget who originated it, so I apologize if I'm leaving somebody out. But they took highlights of Acuff with Houston Nutt's post-LSU interview, mm-hmm. number 5, you better look at him.
Yeah.
A little closer. That's pretty good.
That's good. I think I saw that. It's very clever, whoever came up with it. But, yeah, no, he's a special player. I think Arkansas fans definitely realize that you're only getting to see this once. This is a guy who's going to be playing in the league for a while.
I mean, you know, it's and you're losing opportunities to watch him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is a very pessimistic viewpoint, and I get that. But it's also a realistic. It could happen. Like, he's only guaranteed to have 5 more games at Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, there's 3 regular season games left. There's Florida on Saturday, Texas next week, and then they end with Missouri next weekend. SEC tournament, you lose and you're done. NCAA tournament, you lose and you're done. You know, it'd be great for Arkansas if they've got him for like 12 more games, but. You gotta enjoy this guy while you got a chance to watch him.
I heard an argument the other day too that I thought was really, fascinating. That obviously, like, there are so many good freshmen this year in college basketball. I think it's kind of refreshing, honestly, that you're gonna have a draft class that's like just all these star freshmen again.
Mm-hmm.
There's gonna be like a Darius Acuff or Wagler, or name your Kingston Fleming's really good guard who probably gets picked late lottery. I say late lottery, maybe like 8, 9, 10 range.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if they came back, they're not going to do this. I would be shocked. But if any of those 4 came back for college next year with the freshman class that's coming in next year and mm-hmm. stuff, they would go into a season like, this is the number 1 overall pick for next year. There's just, you have so many good freshmen this year. And Darius Acuff, it's like Arkansas might have the best one as far as guard play is concerned. And so it's one of those things like, hey, you're going to be hearing about this guy for years to come, and soak up every last game that he is in a Razorback uniform, because soon he will be wearing some other uniform.
And good as this class is, remember that Cooper Flagg is actually part of this age group.
Yeah.
And he enrolled at Duke early. And I wonder if that was part of the reason. Maybe they saw, hey, this is what you're playing with, and you might want to get out ahead of the posse a little bit.
The fact that Malik Thomas is doing what he's doing this year and he's taking a background role is crazy, because he's doing what he's doing as a freshman and throw it in a lot of other years, and he's in the conversation for like top 5 freshmen or whatever. I think that you just have so many just elite ones this year that it's really fascinating. You know, Malik Thomas is one of those that you wonder what he does after this year. Like, mm-hmm. what's his stock? What does he need to do? He could come into next year and be right in the conversation for all these awards and stuff. It's just, we're in a moment in time, I think, in college basketball where it's just soak up in the recency, where you've had like 22, 23 year olds that, you know, those are great stories too, I guess, whenever you have the guy who's in his last hurrah before getting on LinkedIn. But I think this is the college basketball that a lot of people love, whenever you have the really young stars.
Well, it would be nice if you could have them for multiple seasons.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing. Yeah, I think I would love this for college basketball to go to more of like and it's not college basketball that makes these rules, by the way. It's the NBA who makes the rules. But that the NBA would go to more of a model kind of like what Major League Baseball has, where if you think you're good enough to go out of high school, then you go ahead and go. But if you're going to come to college, you need to stay there for a couple of 3 years. And I think it would help. I think it would help the college game for sure. Now, the NBA, they don't care about helping the college game. And I get that. But it would be quite beneficial, I feel like, for college basketball if they would implement that kind of rule.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence. Like, I like with both sides of it, because I do like having the fact that, like, you know, you wouldn't be seeing A.J. Devonta or Darius Aiken. Like, you probably wouldn't be seeing these in college ever if they could go, if they did just go right out of high school. And I like that you do get to see them in college, but it does stink that you aren't getting to, like I cover women's basketball. When there's a really good freshman class in women's basketball, you watch them their whole career.
Yeah,
and it's awesome.
Years.
It's a, you get to know, like, Juju Watkins at USC, like, she came in as a freshman, and had she been able to just bypass women's basketball, she'd have been the number one overall or whatever. It's just, you get to watch them grow,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of fun how it grows the sport, and it's, yeah, but, yeah, it's tough with when the NBA comes in and offering these big dollars to guys to, if they could just bypass college, they probably would.
Well, I just, you know, like when I was younger and really into college basketball, you'd get people, they'd come in and they'd stay there for a few years. Now, you know, Corliss Williamson, he left after his junior year. Chris Webber, when he left after his sophomore year, I was like, whoa. I mean, like, people really didn't do that a whole lot. But, you know, you got, and this is early 90s, of course, but you're like, Leitner stayed for 4 years, and Grant Hill stayed for 4 years, and you know, the Fab Four was intact outside of Weber for another year, you know, into their junior season, when I think Juwan Howard ended up going into the pros. You know, and I got a ton of other examples like that where players, they just stayed. You know, they, like, you or Todd Day, you know, Lee Mayberry, Oliver Miller, that group, they were together for 4 years. They could have gone pro early, I think, if they wanted to, and they would have gotten drafted. But that's what college basketball's lost to me right now, is that ability to kind of have a core group together for multiple seasons and, you know, have guys that you could remember. We were having a conversation in here a couple of days ago with Anthony, and we were talking about Billy Richmond. You know, like, Billy, what he's doing right now, I'm sure he's getting drafts, like scouts notice. I don't know if he's good enough to go in the draft this year. I'm very interested to see here, you know, soon, what the mock drafts are saying about Billy Richmond. Whether or not, you know, is he going to be a second-round type, you know, fringe pick this year? You know, does he come back? Because I think if he comes back, Ethan, it's like, what he's doing right now, and you get him for another year potentially, and and God forbid you get him for like a senior year, if that could, you know, be swung.
That's something. Like getting a little greedy.
But seriously, it's like that is how you build yourself into a fan favorite and somebody who, like, you never have to pay for your dinner in this town again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that has been lost in college basketball and really in a lot of college sports. But college basketball has kind of been the sport, I think, that's at the forefront of that, you know, just because of the way the draft works.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, too, like, you're sitting here as Arkansas, and your coach is the one who prides himself on, like, he's going to make you a one and done. Like, and it's like, you know,
he was the one where, you know, 10 years ago, everybody around town said, he's the problem.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, and it's so funny how that's evolved of, like, one and done is the least of people's concerns right now. It's the transferring and stuff. But it's, you know, you sit here and you're like, well, if Arkansas did have a bunch of four-year guys, you aren't getting the full Calipari experience of getting these really elite freshmen in. It's just, you know, you sit here and I think you do enjoy the ones that you do get to watch grow and do all this stuff, but it's also equally cool when you have a Darius Acuff who's gonna be on an NBA roster more likely than not this time next year, and he was at least having that 1 year in a Razorback uniform. I mean, it's what Calipari's done for years. John Wall, name, go down the list.
Oh, I know. I see every
it's
one
what
of
he
them.
Does.
I see every one of those players every time Darius Acuff plays. ESPN, they've got their little. They've got their little. What do you call that?
The Calipari tree.
Yeah, I mean they've
the
got
point guard tree.
They've got that little clip ready to roll every time that Darius Acuff is on TV.
They also
I'm sure
love
we'll
the graphic
tomorrow night.
They also love the graphic that is the like. The GDP of these countries and his players and their earnings. They love
billion.
That
are one. Are we up to $6 billion yet?
I don't know, but they love to show out that these players make more than like random islands in the middle of nowhere. And you're like, you know, cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, Calipari, he loves that graphic too.
how many times, like, what do you think the odds are we'll see Derrick Rose and John Wall on tomorrow's broadcast?
At least twice.
Yeah.
Are we counting College Game Day?
Possibly.
If we're counting Game Day, let's up it to three.
Yeah, I'm going to say if we're counting Game Day, we're going to see it at least two times. We'll hear their names at least four.
Yeah. And the crazy thing,
if Jimmy Dykes was on the call, it might be seven. But it's going to be Billis tomorrow night.
The crazy thing, too, though, is, like, it's warranted. Like, because Darius Acuff, there was a conversation that, like, you know, between Derrick Rose, John Wall, like, he is as good of a college freshman guard that Calis had. Like, there is an argument that can be made, which is just crazy. So, yeah. I mean, it is warranted. Like, I get it. Like, I don't think they're doing it necessarily lightly.
Like, these are all-time great players.
Like, you weren't getting this last year with Boogie Flan.
No, you weren't.
You just have a...
You're getting the comparison, but they weren't warranted comparisons.
Yeah, you're getting this year, like, the legitimate, like, okay, this guy, you can put him in the same breath as these guys because he is doing what they did, and even more in some cases.
Do you think Arkansas can beat Florida?
I think they can. It's going to take a lot of things going right. I think it's going to be a game that if Arkansas is to come out of there with a win... It means that Arkansas played its best game of the year, I think, is what it will take, and it'll take Florida missing some shots.
They're going to need this. This is something I think that's going to be important for Arkansas in a lot of their games moving forward with Carter Knox out. They need an officiating staff that's not going to blow the whistle a whole lot.
Yeah, that's hard to get on the road.
It's hard to get in Bud Walton too. I mean,
I was dying on holy cow. Wednesday night.
I went on a little mini rant on the show Wednesday about how, and this was before the game. About how officials, I hate it when they call the game one way in the first half, and then the second half, they call it a totally different way. And I'll be doggone if that's not what they did at the, like that night.
The 21-second stretch around the midway mark of the second half where they blew the whistle four times about had me, and it put both teams in the bonus.
And one of them, I think, was during the stretch, was Billy Richmond's second foul. Did not touch the guy.
Yeah.
Did not touch the guy.
Yeah. They was an anticipation call. Mm. And I'm telling you, there's nothing worse than a late tip-off. That in the second half, the refs tighten up the whistle a little bit. It is just miserable. But, yeah.
I was falling asleep. I got to be honest. I was watching at home. It's 10:20, and I'm like, gosh. I'm trying to keep my eyes open.
It was a weird game in general. But like, yeah, that if they're going to win on Saturday tomorrow, they're going to have to – play without fouling, and they're going to really need to – it's hard to do against a Florida team where you're going to need to bring the physicality, if that makes sense. Like, it's like, stay out of foul trouble, and you better be physical against this team or else you're going to get punked a little bit. And I think that that's where this gets tricky. It's going to be, ultimately, can Arkansas's bigs limit the Florida bigs and rebound some, and can the Arkansas backcourt just do what it does? And it's going to be Arkansas's backcourt versus Florida's front court. We'll see how it goes.
Need to play physical and not foul. It's kind of like asking for Billy Richmond to come back for 4 years when we don't even know if we're gonna get three.
No, right? I've actually said this recently. I know he fouled out of Alabama, but I've been shocked with the smaller rotation. Now Billy Richmond has for the most part been able to avoid foul trouble
because he was a fouler.
Yeah, and he's plays a lot of minutes now, and it's like
he's great
savvy.
In that role.
He's really savvy, and Calipari's been comparing him to Dr. J some, which I don't know. If we need to, like, you know, talking about putting people in the same breath, if that's warranted yet. Yeah. But at least Calipari did preface it on his radio shows, like, listen, I might not need to be doing this, but then did that. So,
yeah. Daryl Hawkins, that's the comp. That's the comp for Billy Richmond.
Well, Billy Richmond is adored. I have seen more grown men wearing white t-shirts that just say, I heart Billy Richmond than I think I need to see. I've seen so many of those shirts, but Billy Richmond, I mean, he's got a lot of people loving him here.
God, everybody loves, you love a guy that plays that hard, that much energy.
And he's also the guy, I mean, like, you hate it because it hurts the team, I think, but, like, into the half against Missouri, where he just does the sense, like, puts his arm out and gets
the flagrant. Yeah.
It's like he's always going to be in the middle of any chirping and any, he brings, like, the kind of, I don't know, like, you don't like dirty play, but you also do, I think, if you're Arkansas, appreciate a guy who's, shows a little bit of the edge that makes maybe the fan base resonate with it a little bit. Like, they already hate Missouri, and then you have Billy doing something like that at the end. I mean, you like I said, not, you know, condoning flagrant fouls.
Not promoting it.
But it makes it a little exciting.
Yeah, I like it. Not necessarily that. Not the flagrant. But I love watching him play. I really do.
Yeah. He's fun. He's a fun player.
Give me a Billy Richmond t-shirt.
He's one. I'll check on eBay after this. But he's one that, I mean, it's just, Calipari says it It's true. He knows who he is as a player, and he doesn't go outside of it. And I think that fans love that. I mean, I think he's still leading the SEC in field goal percentage as a, you know, a swing man.
He's got four straight 20-point games.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Arkansas, you know, whenever he's playing like this, it's really dangerous because I think that that's what Darius Acuff needs is a player like a Billy Richmond alongside him who knows who he is. That can do the stuff for you that Darius Acuff doesn't have to fully, you know, bear all the weight.
That'll be fun tomorrow night. It reminds me a little bit when Cal went back to Rupp. You know, it's that primetime Saturday night game. I mean, there are going to be a lot of eyes on this. It's a big game. It's a much bigger game than that one was. You know, I was talking with somebody the other day. When was the last time Arkansas went into a game this late in the season on the road with a chance to play a game that had such conference championship implications? It's probably been close to 30 years.
I was thinking about this earlier today, randomly. I kind of feel like I'm getting the same feeling as this is whenever that Bobby Portis team went to Kentucky. I know that Kentucky team was like, was that the undefeated one?
Yeah.
Number one. Like, I'm not.
Well, see, Arkansas finished second in the SEC that year, and I think they were like four or five games back at Kentucky because Kentucky never lost.
So it's like it's not the same as that to where you're like, you know, Arkansas really has a chance to get in the title conversation, SEC title with a win here. But it feels the same to me that I'm, you know, you're going into this and you just feel like, oh, this is a buzzsaw you might be walking into. But you have a team with enough talent that you're like, you know, maybe. Yeah. Maybe something can happen. But one thing we know about John Calipari, usually for games like this, I know it didn't happen in the Kentucky game earlier this year, but you think about Kentucky last year, St. John's, playing Kansas in the tournament. Yeah. When there's something at stake, he has a tendency to really get a team to rise to the occasion. So it could be interesting.
Yeah, and he's not the greatest X and O's coach, but he's got the success that he's had for a reason. Like, you know, he's coaching enough of these games that it's not going to overwhelm him. And I think sometimes it can overwhelm a coach who isn't, you know,
that's a great
adjusted
point
to be in that position.
That's a great point because this is not his first rodeo in
course,
a big game
Golden,
in Gainesville.
Golden's been in plenty of big games now at this point, too. Won the national championship last year. All right, we appreciate you being with us today. Like we said earlier, big weekend here in Fayetteville. Baseball against UT Arlington beginning this afternoon. Over at Baum Walker Stadium, softball's in town, SEC Indoor Track and Field Championships, and of course, Anthony Christensen's in Gainesville for us to cover this game between the Razorbacks and the Gators tomorrow night. Hope that we'll see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the weekend for all of our coverage from these big Razorback events. We'll see you back here for our podcast Monday. Have a great weekend.